The Bible study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary. Welcome back to the Bible study and Ask the Pastor, Paul Clayton. Privileged to be sitting in for vacationing Chuck Rathert. And especially today because we have Pastor Ken Wagoner with us at St. Peter Lutheran Church in Macomb, Illinois. Good morning.
How are you, Paul? Good to be with you, my friend.
Good to have you here today. You should see Concordia Seminary's campus today.
Is it beautiful already?
We're preparing, yes, and especially so. It's been trimmed and manicured and,
yes.
And looks very pristine in preparation for call day tomorrow here at Concordia Seminary. Wasn't that long ago, was it, for you?
Oh, yes, it was. I wish I could say 25 years. 25
oh,
years.
Oh, my
this
goodness.
Year, as a matter of fact, and I can't tell you where the time went, but I know God marks times by months and years, and it's been a long time for me, but I do have great memories, of course. And
well, let's go back there, because it's a double call day. First of all, the vicars get
yes.
their first call, where they're going to spend their vicarage the following year. Let's go there. What was that experience like for you?
Well, I was actually assigned to a larger congregation in northwest Iowa, Trinity, Algona, Iowa. It was a great experience. Had a dear brother in the Lord who was a fairly new pastor. His name is Gary Danke. I don't know if he'd be listening to me today or to us.
He's
today.
Here in St. Louis, isn't he?
He is in St. Louis, and yeah, exactly.
St. John Morganford.
That's right. He is retired now, but
he is.
Was just a tremendous influence on me. And Paul, I have to, if we've got this opportunity, I have to publicly thank him because he was such a good supervisor, but more than that, a brother in the Lord. And for all of our vicars, I say to them, first of all, God bless you as you go out. I hope it's a good experience. I trust it will be. And you can learn a lot. I mean, ministry is an evolving, changing, always dynamic experience. And take advantage of where you are, to learn different situations, different contexts. For example, I was always a St. Louis guy, and then you get out into a rural farming area. And boy, that opened my eyes into the ways that people relate in a rural environment, and that's where I ended up in my first call.
Huh. Well, the old cliche is travel is broadening. Is that the purpose of vicarage?
Absolutely, yes. I have to agree with that, as well as, and that's why we always like to, I believe this is the case, help men and their families perhaps to get into a new context, maybe cross-cultural in whatever way that could be construed. It could be language, but it clearly can be a different part of the United States of America, sometimes even, just a whole different outlook of where ministry is done from a very contemporary congregation to a more traditional congregation. But I will affirm for the brothers, if anybody's listening, those are good experiences. Whatever situation, I trust that the Lord works through that, because it was certainly true in my life, and I can attest to many, many pastors will agree with that.
So City Boy gets assigned to a farming community, and Green Acres is the place to be, huh?
That's right.
You said
That's
it was
exactly
an eye-opener,
right.
And in what ways was it an eye-opener?
Well, I think, first of all, in terms of the close-knit nature of a rural community, I remember, this will take you back, Paul. I remember when the Walmart came into Algona, because they had only these like Main Street, what I'm saying? And then on the outskirts of town, while we happened to be there, the new Walmart opened, and boy, that changed things. And of course, this is literally 27 years ago. Since that time, Walmart has expanded, of course, into all these different areas. But I do remember just hearing how that changed the nature of Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
People were now going to Walmart, and they'd see each other at Walmart
instead of the Western Auto.
Exactly. For example, and others can speak to that more clearly than I can. But it does. highlight the importance of that community. Algona, even though it was a fairly large community, I don't remember, you know, and I'm sure it's grown, but maybe 3,000 at that time, it was still a small, you know, the kind where most people knew their neighbors and they knew
and actually waved to each other in passing cars on roads.
Absolutely, yeah.
We did that in Kansas, yeah. And you don't see that here.
Well, I don't,
in St. Louis County.
No,
nobody
signals
anybody else other than that,
the other
that
one.
Nasty signal, yeah.
Yes, right. Oh, it's that's the case. I mean, I always, my family will know this when they've come up to visit me. We live in a very metropolitan area here in Macomb. We're in Macomb, Michigan, right outside of Detroit. But boy, you know, cars are flying. This is the motor city of the nation, and I mean, cars are flying. Nobody stops for anybody up here, and you miss that in a rural environment. I've had that for a number of my pastoral calls, and that's a real blessing.
Just out of curiosity, our guest in the past hour was Pastor Kurt Taylor in Walse, Michigan. How close are you to Walse in Macomb?
You know, I don't even know where that is. Is it on the west side?
I don't know.
He's
near Detroit, he says.
Yeah, well, he must be way on the west side, and that's the nature of our metropolitan area. It's such a big place. I mean, Paul, there are communities up here that would identify themselves with Greater Detroit that I have no idea where they are.
Didn't it used to be the third largest city at one time?
Yes, and of course that has changed.
Back
so
when
much.
We were the seventh, I think.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so Vicarage, and then after a year of study abroad, you come back to the campus for your final year, and then a call. And then what was that like, and were you married at the time?
I was married. Brenda and I, my wife, had been married, I don't remember how many years, a few years, like four, something like that. But that is that, and no children at that time. We have a almost 18-year-old daughter right now. But boy, that is, you know, that's the exciting time. You invest all those years, college, and then of course seminary itself, and then the year of vicarage. You come back for your fourth year, and I know I'm repeating old stuff for a lot of people. They know this, but you just can't wait to get out
and be deployed.
Exactly. let's get this final year out of the way. I suppose it's like that with medical school and law school or whatever. You want to get out and put into practice all the rich learning that has taken place over the
hit the ground running, but you're a little wet behind the ears. You're young, and you're dealing with people perhaps over twice your age.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What's that experience like once you're assigned?
Well, it's humbling, and I will clearly remember my first sermon, my first worship service. Oh, I truly can do that because I was in a dual parish in southeastern Iowa, and you know, Paul, I don't mind saying this now, you're petrified. You're just trying your best not to to mess it up too much. You know,
and you know you're making a first impression.
Exactly right. And so you plot it out, you plan it out to the best of your ability, and you know, as you said, it's not like. It's not like in some cases, like a lawyer, for example. You get into a law office, and I don't suspect you go right to trial the next day. But when you get there on a Monday or a Tuesday, guess what? You're on for worship Sunday, so a lot of things have to happen. And I can remember that this is the time before we even had we did not have a copy machine. At the congregation I served. I mean, that's how long it goes. So everything is, you put the numbers
mimeograph?
On the board. Yeah,
numbers on the board.
Yeah, numbers on the board, and you work through the liturgy, and you type out. I remember typing out my sermon on my old-fashioned click-click-click-click typewriter. And you know, but the people are wonderful. They welcome you, and they're affirming. And when you hear for the first time, you know, good sermon, Pastor. Well, you know, that's just like...
That's the one good thing about playing to a Christian audience. They can be very forgiving.
That's right. That's exactly right. It was a great experience, and, you know, I will treasure those days.
Let's go to the phones here. Ms. Harris, you're on KFUO Radio with our guest, Pastor Ken Wagner.
Oh, hi, Pastor Wagner. Are you anywhere near East Lansing, Michigan?
No, ma'am. That would be probably about 90 miles from here. Lansing and East Lansing are the capital of Michigan, so we're...
Big college town, too.
Big college town. That's where Michigan State is. Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
I don't know the area. I've never been there, to be honest with you, but it's kind of like the center of the state, and it really is the political capital in more ways than one of, but Detroit is sort of the economic capital.
I was there in East Lansing.
Okay.
I lived there for a while, and
yeah.
I enjoyed living there. I don't have a map in front of me. That's why I was asking you, are you anywhere near there? But my question has to do with maybe Paul, is it Paul Clayton? Are you there?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Perhaps you might want to answer the question also. It has to do with ministering to the black community,
mm-hmm.
The Missouri Synod. There was an effort made in the past to, have black ministers, at Concordia Seminary and all. And now I see that we do have the African students, maybe Spanish students and all. But I'm wondering about, is there an effort being made to minister to get pastors to go, black men to go to Concordia Seminary and become pastors to minister to the black community?
Well, I couldn't answer that right off the bat, but I'll ask Dr. Dale Meyer in the morning about that.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That is a great question, Paul, and maybe I can affirm. I know our church body truly is committed to an inclusive ministry throughout the United States of America and around the world. And for example, I can't express it more forcefully how much I appreciated what she said. And I think I can speak for the seminary. And the recruitment, I mean, we're probably doing everything in our power to recruit African-American and black young men, even she was also saying is about to bring in, you might say, international students, either to serve in our context or to return to their native countries to serve. So to get right to the point, I trust that the seminary, Concordia Seminary and Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, and many other seminaries, I'm very inclusive on that. I trust we're doing the best we possibly can to recruit men who are committed to the ministry and have that aptitude, so to speak, for serving the Lord in a congregation or maybe even a more specialized area. Now, of course, and she will know this, Ms. Harris, you will know this, in our area in Detroit, with a large black population, of course, even, of course, in the suburbs where I live, we have neighbors who, we have a diversity of neighbors, right here in my neighborhood, but we're doing our best as well to reach out to all populations. But I just have to affirm what she said and say, please, Lord, continue to raise up talented men who are committed to the pastoral ministry. It was, as Lutherans, we have a great gift to share with the world, and we want to be doing that in an inclusive way. So great question all the way around.
I'd like to follow up on that first call. Were you particularly and intentionally sensitive toward your wife when you made that first call and how she would be received by the congregation?
Paul, I'd like to say yes. I remember driving up, and you think I'm making this up, but it's true. I remember driving up from St. Louis to Iowa, to Millersburg, Iowa, was the first call that I had. And then, of course, we're driving in the car, in the truck, excuse me. I drove the truck.
Well, you fit right in then.
yeah, exactly right. And the other, some of the other men had come down to help us out. But I remember talking about, how first impressions were good impressions. Mm-hmm. And when we arrived at the congregation, literally in the basement, there were a number of the members who had welcomed us. They had a luncheon all prepared. It was just really neat. And, I mean, I'm so blessed Brenda did a great job. She was well received, and she loved being there as well. It was a great experience for us. Lived in the parsonage, 50 steps away from the church. So I could count them. Now, of course, if I was a little faster trying to get between the parsonage and the church, I could do it maybe in 48 or 47, but always 50 steps. I remember between the entrance to the church and the entrance to our home.
Are the graduates' wives groomed for this kind of thing? Do they know what to anticipate? Are they prepared in any way?
Yes, they are, and I know there's been an intentional effort even way over the past couple of years and maybe even decades to integrate wives into what is going to be the new life for example for their husband or for their family as well, and really to help them to understand the dynamics of living in a parsonage or living in a congregation with a congregation that may be small. They might have come from a larger congregation. We have a larger congregation here at St. Peter. We're about 3,600 members. So, you know, that's a different type of community, faith community, from, let's say, 120 in worship. So all those kinds of contexts, I know the seminary does a great job to, maybe equip is the right word, but to help families make that transition to a new setting. And a new ministry, and perhaps even to tell them a little bit about some of the challenges that you will face. You know, there's great titles of books, and I've read them, and you probably have too. You know, pastors live in glass houses. Yeah. You know, that kind of image, and so you don't throw stones. You definitely don't throw stones.
Worship style. You came from city of St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
25 years ago, were the worship styles more uniform than they are today?
Absolutely.
Will these new graduates face a bigger variety and face people with different preferences?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Paul, I couldn't agree with that more. And, you know, just the use of technology in worship. And we're a fairly... We span the gamut up here. We have very traditional and contemporary worship. Now, I'm the first one to say our contemporary worship is, I believe, very solid. It's Christ-centered. It is sacramental. I was the preacher last weekend. Had a baptism in the in our contemporary service. We do the Lord's Prayer. We did the Creed. I had the sermon. You know, the Lord's Supper. All those, but it is so much. Oh, it's so much different from when I first began my ministry. We had one hymnal, so to speak. That was the new Lutheran worship that had recently come out, and quite frankly, again, no technology today. But I, you know, I trust that the seminary, they're doing a great job preparing men, second career men, young men for this diversity. But yes, they certainly do have to be both open and you know, grounded. I think that's the other side too. So if it's a different context, if it's a traditional service and they like contemporary services, I would suspect that the vast majority of our vicars and our new pastors who are going to get their first call, they know that's coming, and they've been prepared very well to be able to adapt.
Mm-hmm. This time of year is also confirmation time. Dr. Meyer was telling me he was at a church in Texas over the weekend preaching where they had 68 confirmants.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that neat? Oh, what a great celebration.
He was amazed.
Yeah, we're going to have 53 up here. We have that's a smaller class. The last year's class was about 65, and the year before that we had 72. I couldn't believe it. I mean, it's kind of chaos. And I suspect it's a little boring or repetitious for the people sitting out. You know, when you have 40 different students coming up at one, you know, confirmants coming up at one time. But you know, we celebrate confirmation up here. We do it up pretty big. Special order worship. All the families are there. We, you know, put out the word. We have confirmation not this weekend, Mother's Day weekend, but the following weekend, and so we'll probably have about Honestly, maybe 2,600 people over the course of our services. We will have four different services devoted to confirmation. We do it that way rather because we couldn't have, you know, one or two where everybody would be able to. And we also want to make sure that different services see the confirmands up there, you know. So we're excited about that. Confirmation, that's my area, Paul. I hope you don't mind my saying
no,
that's what
please
I,
do.
I,
and I was going to say that your mentor, Pastor Gary
Denke, yes,
he embraced the Teens Encounter Christ retreats at his church when he was active. And so I guess he had a heart for the youth as well.
Oh, he did. And I mean, I know personally that his prior to becoming a pastor, he had served in youth ministry. So he always, I mean, even in my 1 year with him, and I'd always hoped perhaps we could get back together, you know, as a pastoral team. But you know, the Lord always has different purposes and plans for us. He comes back to St. Louis, and you know, and I'm out here now. But yes, he did have a wonderful heart for youth ministry, and that's the beauty, and that's why I want to celebrate confirmation, because what we do in confirmation as a pastoral and as a congregational ministry, we recognize that this is a critical time in the life of a young person, and they have an opportunity to publicly affirm their faith, to affirm their baptism, and to say, I am moving into these early young adult years, into a second phase of my life. I'm no longer a child, and I'm going to publicly state my commitment to Jesus as my Lord and my Savior. So we really do, and I know a number of congregations do as well, but in the Lutheran Church, we do want to celebrate confirmation, and we want to keep it. I believe I don't want to lose it by any means. Now, there are great ways to bring parents in, grandparents in, and we're trying some creative things in instruction up here, but the actual rite of confirmation, boy, that's a great day for me, Paul. I celebrate it, and for
those are your kids.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, how has the confirmation process changed over the past 25 years for you, if it has at all?
Well, it has. It truly has. From a smaller congregation, much much smaller, very intimate rural setting, to a metropolitan area with families on the go. I'd say three different things, really. One has to be just the fact that families really are busier today than they were 25 years ago. I think that's true. I think that's an honest statement to make. The second is that we don't have the this may sound a little critical, but we don't have kind of the old-fashioned understanding of the importance of confirmation. So we're competing even with other things, but we're also competing for allegiance with the parents. They, you know, they grew up perhaps confirmed, but they didn't. You know, it wasn't as important to them as it was in the past years, or you know, 30 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 mm-hmm. years ago. So we're competing with parents who may not have come in via youth confirmation, junior confirmation. They might have come into our church, St. Peter, through adult confirmation. And so we have to kind of reestablish that foundation, the importance of that. And then the third area is technology. I mean, and I know we're up close to the bottom of the hour, but you have to do some interesting things for junior high students to pay attention to you.
To hold their attention.
Exactly. It doesn't work anymore. You know, we're going to go into the catechism, open your books, and that's what we try to do. We try to make it interesting. We do more small group dynamics, and we have different pastors. We had three pastors here working with, and we all bring our different styles and our different interests. So we do things with PowerPoint and small groups and kind of retreat setting. It's different.
Yeah. A question for you to think about.
Okay.
We'll answer it when we return. Have you ever had a parent or a couple come to you and say, hey, Junior, or Jane just don't want to go to confirmation. What should I do? How do you handle that when the kid resists? We'll be right back with Pastor Cam Wagner right after this.
If you are looking for a place to take Mom on Mother's Day, consider Brunch at the Sem. Our Mother's Day brunch begins at 10 o'clock and goes until 3. The price is $22 for adults and $5 for children 4 through 10. To make reservations, call 314-505-7322. 314-505-7322.
If you're an athlete 50 and older, register today for the 32nd Annual Senior Olympic Games, featuring 85 events at 13 of St. Louis's finest venues, May 26th through the 31st, sponsored by the J. The games are open to all athletes 50 and over. For more information, visit stlouisseniorolympics.org. That's stlouisolympics.org. The Senior Olympics, seeking athletes like you. The games take place May 26th through 31st.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Parents in Massachusetts are angry to find out their own tax dollars are being used to undermine them as parents. State health officials are funding a teen-centered website doing just that. A young girl mascot named Maria draws teens into the site. Then she discourages young pregnant girls from choosing to have the baby, telling them babies are stressful. She also warns them about the downside of adoption. But abortion is another story. Maria doesn't mention the emotional or physical risks. Instead, she tells teens getting an abortion is much easier than it sounds. She then says how to get around the law requiring a parent's permission before having an abortion. They're using tax dollars to tell kids how to get secret abortions, and it needs to come to an abrupt end.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Muslim Americans react. I'm Norman Hall with Religion Roundup. Muslim Americans are among those in the U.S. who have expressed relief that 9/11 plotter Osama bin Laden has been killed by American forces operating in Pakistan.
American Muslims are like every other Americans. They want to be safe and secure in their home and their families.
Ibrahim Hooper is a spokesman for CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations. CARE has also condemned the defacement of an Islamic center in Portland, Maine. Someone scrawled, "Osama today, Islam tomorrow." At the Vatican, some 60,000 believers gathered Monday for another Mass as part of the beatification of Pope John Paul II. That puts him a step closer to sainthood. And the ACLU has taken a Tennessee school district to federal court. The lawsuit alleges that the Sumner County school system promotes religious activity, including prayer, Bible study, and the display of a cross. With Religion Roundup, I'm Norman Hall.
When it comes to salvation, some people think that God starts it and we finish it, or we start it and God finishes it. Recently, Pastor Nathan Metter said on the Bible study that God starts it and God finishes it.
I know who I am in the recesses of my mind, in those thoughts that bounce around inside my head and in my heart that you don't know, and yet God knows them. God knows me intimately, just like he knew Paul, just like he knew Peter, just like he knew David, and he called them anyway, because that's the grace of God. There is no way that I could make myself right enough to do this. The reality is, pastors and apostles are still human. It's when you are most aware of your sin, when you are most aware of the fact that I don't think I can be good enough to finish the work that God started, then and only then do you understand why it's so important that God starts it and God finishes it.
More and more people every day are using the Bible study archives at KFUO.org.
Our phones are open at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our guest today is Pastor Ken Wagner from St. Peter Lutheran Church in Macomb, Michigan, which is just northeast of Lake St. Clair above Detroit.
You got it. Yes, sir.
And Pastor Kurt Taylor in Wallis, Michigan is southwest of you, the other side of Lake St. Clair in Detroit.
Is that right? Okay.
In Wallis, Michigan. Yeah, there you go. Our phones are open. We've been discussing call day and confirmation, but the topics are wide open, whatever you want to talk about here. I asked you a question before the break. Have you ever had a family come to you and say, hey, our kid does not want to do confirmation? What should we do?
Yes, I have, as a matter of fact, and I suspect that a lot of my brothers would have a similar experience. I think the first thing that I did in those cases is to get into the home, to put it bluntly, make a visit, you know, and then lay out the blessings of being a, quote, confirmed member of a Lutheran congregation. And what I mean by that is that you are welcome to the Lord's table. You will always be able to, if you go to visit Grandma and Grandpa at another Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod congregation, you would be welcome to come to that Lord's Supper. You can take communion with Grandpa when he, you know, all those kinds of little things, but really they're tremendous blessings. But also, I tried to lay out that this is not a kind of like a hoop you have to jump through. This is more, to my mind, of the natural conclusion. It's so to speak, and I know this is not a good analogy, not a perfect analogy, but it's like getting into the playoffs or the Stanley Cup. But I mean, that's where you want to be. You want, when you're baptized as a child, you want to be a confessing adult. You want to be able to stand before the congregation publicly and say, yes, what my parents did for me when they brought me to baptism and God claimed me as his beloved child, now I have the privilege, I have kind of the joy to stand before you and to say, this is my faith, this is what I believe right now as a 13-year-old or as a 14-year-old. Now, I know that sounds pretty heavy, Paul, but that's the dynamic. And a lot of times, my experience has been, when kids hear that, they kind of say, oh, well, okay, then I will. But until maybe as a pastor and parents can do this too, until you kind of put it in those terms where this is the natural outcome of what happened when you were 6 weeks old or 2 months old or whatever the case would be when you were baptized into Christ, we always knew and we always hoped that you would stand before this chancel rail and publicly state, I believe in Jesus Christ. And that's what we do. That's why in our worship service for confirmation, and you know this as well as I do, but we have those series of questions. You've been taught the small catechism. Do you accept it? And the kids say yes. Do you intend to live for Christ? Yes, with the help of God. Do you promise to always hold on to this faith, even to the point of death? I know that's a heady question. That's very important. But they say yes with the help of God. They want to hold on to it. And of course, they say the creed. Is this your faith? Do you intend to become a member of our church? All those questions are built into the rite of confirmation. And then, you know, it's sort of like the natural conclusion to what happened when they were baptized.
Mm. I'll tell you how we solved the problem right after we take this call here.
Okay.
From Perry. Perry, you're on the air with Pastor Ken Wagner in Macomb, Michigan.
Hello, Pastor Ken. How are you?
This is my good friend Perry. I am great. Thank you, my brother. How are you?
I'm doing well. I have a very hard question for you, though.
Okay.
Is it go Rams or go Lions?
Oh, it's always go Rams. I promise you, I will never change. I mean, yes, certainly I'm an exile living in a strange and a foreign land, but my heart is in St. Louis.
Is he really a lion in Rams clothing?
I think so. That's what I was thinking. Well, bless, Pastor.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you, Perry. Blessings to you and your family. Hmm. That goes back, and he knows. I mean, I was privileged to be part of the confirmation experience for Perry's children as well. So, and see, that's why I look at it. I mean, I'm only a servant, of course, but whatever context I'm in, I get the joy of helping parents to raise their children in the fear and the admonition of the Lord, because that's what they promised. Mm-hmm. You know, when they were baptized, they had a baptism on Sunday. Do you? And we say the usual, the traditional words. You know, you place in their hands the Holy Scriptures, you bring them to the services of God's house, you, mm-hmm. you know, teach them the commandments and so on. And it's just my privilege to walk alongside them.
Well, we were members of a church about 12 miles from our home, and no close proximity, okay? And so my daughter didn't make a connection with the kids in the church.
Yes.
And so she resisted going to confirmation, and I asked Pastor Lukomsky, what do you think I ought to do? And he says, well, she doesn't have to go to that church for confirmation. Find out where her friends are going for confirmation and let her go with them. We did that, and it worked.
Yeah. Well said. And we have a little
plus, we had a system worked out where we could shuttle the kids between the parents because we were all in the same neighborhood.
Right. Yeah, exactly, huh? Right. And you know, we do that too here. For example, we have a day school. I'll make it real quick. We have a day school where students come to our day school, but they attend a different church, if you know what I'm saying here.
Uh-huh.
But they come to our confirmation.
Because they have relationships with those kids.
Exactly right. Exactly.
And the kids are very relational.
Right. Absolutely right. I mean, they'll come to confirmation, and you know, all the girls will know each other. But mm-hmm. And then that's why we do everything on Sunday morning in order to try to develop those relationships. But it's hard, and you know, 13, 14 years old, when you're thrust into a big group of 50 kids, it can be rather intimidating.
Well, we all have our comfort zones, and if you've got a friend that's doing the same thing that your parents want you to do, it makes it a little easier.
You know it.
I would think, yeah. Want to handle some topics that are in the news?
Yes, sir.
All right. Peruvian President Alan Garcia says Pope John Paul II should get credit for the death of Osama bin Laden. The late Pope was beatified on Sunday, and Garcia credits that with the killing of bin Laden. Garcia called bin Laden the incarnation of evil, the demonic incarnation of crime and hatred. He's maybe president of Peru, but he's no theologian.
That is an understatement. Oh my goodness, it just kind of pains my heart to hear statements like that. And I, you know, even for our brothers and sisters who are listening here within the context of the Catholic community, if you're in the Catholic Church, I had an interesting conversation last night. We have a Monday evening worship, and just before worship, somebody came and asked me about the beatification process and so on. And
your Lutheran members are curious about that.
Yes, exactly right. A former Catholic who had had joined our congregation and now is an elder. This has been about 10-15 years, real committed to our Lutheran heritage, but knows in a little bit, in a little sense, what the Catholic Church is teaching and going through. He says, why do we still think, even as Christians, that somebody who, an ordinary mortal who has died, has to hear our prayer and then answer our prayer rather than talking to God himself? And I said, of course, that's kind of the heart and the center of the Reformation, that we have one God, one mediator, Jesus Christ our Lord. We come to our Father through Christ. We don't need all of the other intercessories.
What a privilege. We get to go to the top.
And that's what he said. He said, why don't people understand that? We can go directly to the source of blessing. And I said, I agree with you, my friend. His name is Chris.
I can identify with Chris. I come from the same tradition. And that's the big revelation for me when I became a Lutheran.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
And that was part of the, we were talking about and I say this humbly and respectfully, that John Paul II, who did much good as a leader of the church, but now he has been attributed to him, one miracle, and then presumably other miracles even in heaven right now with the Lord. And, you know, we have to stand firm on the truth of the Scriptures that it is God who heals, and we can go directly to our Father for healing, to pray to him for our healing, not through human intermediaries, because there's only one intermediary. There's one mediator, the God-man, Jesus Christ.
Perhaps there's a lesson here for fathers, because when you're a kid, it's easier to go to mom with your problem than it is to dad sometimes.
Yeah.
Maybe even your uncle.
Yep.
You know, that would be like the Pope on the side.
Right.
It would be like Mary. You know, it's
exactly.
It's ingrained in us where it's right. It's, you know, we fear dad.
And we need not do that, because we have been, as we heard over Easter and through the Holy Week, we have been washed clean. We've been covered with the blood of Christ. We have been justified, and we have been raised with Christ. Now we can approach our Father in the confidence that our Redeemer lives. And, you know, we're still in this Easter glow, of course. We're going to continue it up here at St. Peter's, as churches do throughout the world. We are Easter people who know that forgiven, we can approach God through the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ.
Mm. There's a piece in the paper today that kind of relates to the story I told you. It's about the positive side of peer pressure. And it's coming from a secular perspective, but there is something to positive peer pressure, and I think that's what my daughter encountered when we set her up with a buddy system to go to confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Join the Club. It's by Tina Rosenberg. I want to follow up on that.
Okay.
There's another piece in the paper today that asks the question, what propels us to do bad things? Once again, this is coming from a psychological, not a theological perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And it states here that this new book, it's titled Out of Character, Surprising Truths About the Liar, Cheat, Sinner, and Saint Lurking in All of Us. And these two psychologists, they did this study at Northeastern University in Boston, and the results appear in USA Today. They say character isn't set, says psychologist David DeSteno. He contends in his book that public figures aren't alone. Any of us are capable of both vice and virtue, and can act much more out of character than we think. Now, this is done from a secular perspective, but mm-hmm. as I read that, I'm thinking saint and sinner. Sure.
Yeah,
we
yeah
know
exactly.
About
that dialectic, isn't it? It's kind of a tension that we live in as mortal human beings. I mean, we're not perfect. I mean, it's great to hear, can I say, like the academy, the secular academy, making this kind of a statement. But the church has been, and God's people have been saying this for 2,000 years now, to recognize that tension that we live in. And many times we do indeed act out of character. I'm part of a, real quickly here, I'm part of a mentoring process for our Lutheran High North students. We have a character course, and it's really, really fascinating. We use the character counts material, and these are seniors who are getting ready to go into college, of course, and the leader is a member of our congregation. He's a dentist, and has just a passion for helping these kids when they get out into college not to fall away from their faith, but to be able to maintain their character, including when they go out, you know, into the business world, because that's really where the book comes to into play here, because a lot of times you can have this foundation in the Christian faith, and then you get out into the quote business world or your chosen vocation, and you have these tough questions that you, am I going to act in character or am I going to act out of character? So I'm privileged to be part of this. It's called Business Character Values, because the focus is really on equipping seniors to be able to take out their Christian faith and their Christian character out into whatever chosen vocation they go to. And we talk about these kinds of things. We use that phrase, out of character, you know, that you're acting out of character. And it's that, and the kids recognize it too, Paul. They know that they're going to be, that would be the negative peer pressure, I would presume, right? You know, that they, mm-hmm. that they're kind of not forced, but drawn away to act out of character. On the other hand, what about the positive peer pressure, positive pressure in the sense of continuing to walk in character? Interesting story. What else do they say about that?
Well, on the topic of character, based on their tests, and they let me give you a little bit of background about that. They did 7 years of research on 2,000 people and put them in situations where people thought they were acting anonymously, yet they can see what they do, they can give them temptations and see which ones they accept and what kinds of decisions these people made. And they say that most people view character as something that is formed in childhood. The classic motif that you have the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other, and you learn to listen to one or another. Once you've chosen which side you're going to listen to, your character is set, and that's how you're going to be for most of your life. Mm. What they argue is that it's a much more dynamic process. Character isn't set. There is inherent tension in the mind at both the unconscious and conscious levels between these desires for short-term goals and long-term goals. If you think about it, not in terms of good and evil, but in terms of things that serve me well in the short term or that can serve me well in the long run, then it's balancing those two aspects that affect your character. That means any of us can act much more out of character than we think.
And you know what? That's interesting. I will definitely check that out. But what strikes me right there, to be direct, is that it is a kind of a different perspective on what we would say as Christians in terms of that that dual nature, saint and sinner, that we live in at the same time. And what I do appreciate it is they understand that it doesn't, you know, it just doesn't stop when you're confirmed.
No.
So to speak, it continues all through your life. And I like that phrase you said, it's much more dynamic, understanding that this tension never leaves us. But that's exactly what we
which
would
is affirm. Why we need Jesus
exactly throughout the entirety of our lives. But I mean, let's talk, you know, let's talk practical. Let's talk about the Apostle Paul. Even at the end of his ministry, at the end of his age, he recognized, he understood this this tension within him. And I'm going to call it good and evil, right and wrong. That's not just so much what serves me short term and what serves me long term. That's kind of a secular perspective. But for the Apostle Paul, he clearly recognized that it was this internal struggle that, and the only way to be able to overcome it is through the grace of Christ, mm-hmm. through the power of Christ, Christ living in me. And that's why I know when he writes, and I think that's a mark of maturity. You get older, you understand how these are still issues for me personally, Ken Wagoner. But I also want to say to our young people and to our younger families, you know, don't think that this is a, you know, you're going to get to the point where you say, okay, I got it all together now. It's an ongoing throughout the entirety of our earthly lives reality. We cannot get away from it. And that's the importance of staying connected mm-hmm. to Christ. That's exactly what you said.
As high-profile examples, they point to Tiger Woods. There's a photo of Elliot Spitzer and Marion Jones, who won 5 medals at the 2000 Summer Olympics but forfeited them after acknowledging that she took performance-enhancing drugs, and Governor Mark Sanford.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's 11:52 at KFUO Radio, and let's go back to the phones here, Pastor. James is on the line with us, who's looking for an application for a scripture verse. Go right ahead, James.
Yes. How are you, Brother Paul? It's
very
always good.
Good
to hear you.
Good to hear you.
Hi, James.
Hi. I'd like for an application of Proverbs chapter 12, verses 25 and 26. An application understanding in regards to Christian psychology, or can I glean something like that out of those two verses?
Okay, very good. 12:26?
Yeah, 12. Chapter 12, verses 25 and 26.
And 26. Okay.
Now hang up and listen.
Yeah, I'm going to read it out loud. This is from the ESV. I've got the Lutheran Study Bible in front of me, and I have the New Living Translation as well. But if I heard him correctly, Proverbs 12, 25 and 26, anxiety in a man's heart weighs him down, but a good word makes him glad. One who is righteous is a guide to his neighbor, but the way of the wicked leads them astray. Well, maybe just on a personal note, in the month of March, because there's 31 days. I read through the entirety of the book of Proverbs. Mm. Now in April, I just finished, I didn't finish it, but I was reading in Isaiah, and I'm continuing in Isaiah. James, great question about the strength, the power of Proverbs to capture our human condition. And I don't know if I heard you correctly, but can we make, maybe I could state it like this, Paul, real quickly. I believe that the book of Proverbs is divine wisdom. I believe it's godly wisdom. It was written by Solomon and other wisdom writers, but I fully affirm that everything that's godly and divine about these Proverbs, individual Proverbs, we will find validated and authenticated in our human, in the best of our human search for knowledge. So, for example, when you say anxiety in a man's heart weighs him down, that strikes me a lot like the kinds of psychology books that I read on the effects of anxiety and depression. Indeed, it does bring people down, truly. But a good word makes him glad. Now, I think we've all been there as the recipient of an encouraging word or a good insight from somebody, a friend, to bring us up. So James, I don't know if this is where you were going, my friend, but can we make Proverbs into a good resource to help us understand the nature of human life, psychology, sociology? I think the answer is absolutely yes. Paul, did I capture a little bit what he was talking
did.
About?
I think you did well with that. Okay. And since you're doing so well, you're on a roll. Let's unpack today's verse from God's Word. It's Romans 12:12. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. My question, is that law, is that gospel, or both?
I believe, and I probably have a little bit different perspective than many people, but I believe that is gospel because of our identity. When we are in Christ, even in an imperative like be joyful cannot be a condemning word, but it can be an encouraging word. I want to come right back, that idea of it's a good word. It's a good word from the Lord. So, for example, when that's just one in the book of Romans, but all throughout, let us do good to the household of faith. Now, that's an encouragement. We recognize, I fully understand that I don't always spend my money wisely, and I don't take care of my neighbors and my brothers and sisters in St. Peter, but nevertheless, it still strikes me when I recognize that I'm a forgiven child of Christ, a forgiven child of God. It strikes me in a way that encourages me and says, you know what? I want to do more. I want to be able to help out my brothers and sisters at St. Peter. So I can be generous with the money that God has given to me, and that's a great blessing all the way around. So do I see it? I see it primarily as gospel encouragement.
When I read that at first, I'm thinking, well, I don't do that all the time, and so that's like the law talking to me. But then I guess because I realize I don't do that all the time, there's gospel in it.
That's right. Because I know one who has done it for me.
Right.
I mean, he had his whole heart set on saving me. Of course, the whole world. But I mean, I always love that phrase. If I had been the only sinner in the world, would Jesus have died? The answer is yes, of course. So that just it doesn't extol me. It doesn't elevate me. It shows how wonderful, how high, how deep, how wide the love of Christ is for. For me personally, and I mean that's you can take it the wrong way that I'm like the center of attention, the center of the world, but no, I look at it that's really about Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for me that's both law and gospel in
right.
one verse there.
Exactly.
Thank you for being with us today, Pastor Ken Wagner.
My pleasure, Paul. Thank you for the honor.
Tomorrow on Ask the Pastor, let me scroll down here and see who our Dr. Lane Berglund's going to be with you. You love him. That'll be a good one tomorrow. on Ask the Pastor. Listen to Chuck Rathard and guest pastors Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study Archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.